Welcome to Sustainable Voices, produced by Thomas Walsh. Imagine you're at a banquet and see that you're the first in line. How do you know how much you can take? Imagine that this banquet includes not just food and water, but also all of the materials that you require for shelter, clothing, healthcare, and education. It all looks and smells so good, and you are hungry. Just what will you heap on your plate? How much is enough to leave for your neighbours behind you in the line? Now, extend this cornucopia to today's global economy with its millions of products and where the necessities for life come from all around the world. 6.5 billion people, shoulder to shoulder, form a line that encircles the globe over 180 times. With plates in hand, they too wait behind you, hearty appetites in place. And behind them are kookaburras, kangaroos, butterflies and snakes, untold millions of species of animal, millions upon billions of unique beings. And stretching out even further behind them are the ghosts of the soon-to-be-born children, cubs and larvae. A harmonious feast just might be possible, but it requires a bit of restraint, or shall we say, a tamed appetite. As our plate becomes a shopping cart, becomes a ute, filling our home, attic and basement, and perhaps even a rented storage unit with nature transformed into things. Just how much is enough? How much is fair? How much can you take without depriving those that follow you of the same rich global banquet? How much can you take sustainably? So what is sustainability? The answer will depend on the person you are asking. Are they rich, poor, educated, employed, unemployed? Are they single? Do they have a family? Do they live in the city? Do they live on a farm? What is their nationality? What country are they living in? Just what are their aspirations? What do their children want to be when they grow up? Sustainability is a concept that has always been difficult to define, and as a consequence, it has often been misappropriated and had its meaning abused. Just what do we mean by the word sustainability? What does it mean to live in a sustainable manner? Why are we even concerned about it in the first place? According to the World Wildlife Fund's Living Planet Report, Australians have an average ecological footprint of 7.7 hectares per person. So just what is an ecological footprint? Well, it's a measure of the amount of nature's resources an individual, community, or a country consumes in a given year in order to meet its material and service needs. It is calculated using information on rates of consumption, land productivity, and the rate at which ecosystems can recycle wastes in order to determine the area of biologically productive land and water required to produce the resources consumed and to assimilate the wastes produced by society using current prevailing technology. Because people use resources from all over the world and affect faraway places with their pollution, footprint is the sum of these areas, wherever they are on the planet, and is expressed in global hectares. For example, to produce a car, you need to mine a certain amount of land for the raw materials and energy. You need to burn fossil fuels to melt and mold the metal ore. You need oil from which to derive the plastic components of the vehicle, and land on which to situate the factory, water for use during the manufacturing process, and finally, a certain amount of intact ecosystem is required to recycle the waste products and absorb the greenhouse gases released during the car's manufacture, its use by its final owner, and then those produced by its eventual disposal. It should be said that the ecological footprinting calculation uses conservative estimates for consumption and yields. As such, the result tends to underestimate human demand on nature. It's also worth noting the ecological footprint does not include materials for which the biosphere has no significant assimilation capacity, such as for plutonium and other radioactive elements associated with nuclear energy production, PCBs, a hormone disruptor that is so widespread and persistent that it has been detected in mother's milk, and chlorofluorocarbons that deplete atmospheric ozone are just three examples. Also, heavy metals such as mercury, which do not break down, but instead bioaccumulate. That is, they increase in concentration as it moves up the food chain until we're no longer able to safely eat certain types of fish. As these materials do not break down and instead persist in the environment, these materials cannot be used in a sustainable manner. So an ecological footprint of 7.7 hectares for the average Australian is the amount of productive land we each personally require to meet all of our material needs. Yet according to the Living Planet report, there are only 1.8 hectares of productive land available per person worldwide. This means that if everyone in the world led the same lifestyle as the average Australian, we would need a total of 4.3 planet Earths in order to satisfy everyone's needs. Australia has the fourth highest ecological footprint behind the US, which requires 9.5 hectares of land per person. Compare this to an individual in China, who only uses 1.5 hectares. Whilst in India, the average is even lower, at 0.8 hectares per person. And these are all figures taken from the 2004 Living Planet Report, freely available online at the World Wildlife Fund's website. Sometime during the mid-1980s, the moment occurred when humanity claimed the entire sustainable yield of the Earth of 1.8 hectares per person for our own use. Since then, the global average footprint has risen to 2.2 hectares per person. This indicates that humanity is now utilizing our natural resources at a rate that is 20% faster than they can be replenished. We're now drawing down on the Earth's natural capital at the expense of future generations in a manner from which the Earth may not recover. The consequences of this overshoot, according to the Millennium Ecosystem Report, commissioned by the United Nations in 2001, is that a full two-thirds of the planet's ecosystems are now in decline. At least 20% of world fishing stocks are depleted. Almost an entire quarter of the Earth's surface has now been converted to cropland. Global water tables are dropping, and the threat of climate change is beginning to make itself felt. Essentially, this report concludes that human activity is putting such a strain on the planet that the ability of ecosystems to meet future demand can no longer be taken for granted. In many ways, the report suggests, we are living on borrowed time. In Australia, the effects of ecological overshoot manifest as the degradation of the lands and waters upon which our agricultural society depends. 2.5 million hectares are currently affected by dryland salinity, with an additional 5.7 million hectares now at risk of developing the problem. The clearance of native vegetation driven by agriculture and the urban sprawl continues, and this process has been recognised as the single most significant threat to Australia's biodiversity, as it causes the loss and fragmentation of habitat. Our river ecosystems are also under threat, as we use over 24,000 gigalitres of water a year nationally, most of which comes from our rivers, of which 26% are now over-extracted. Irrigation accounts for 75% of water used in Australia. With 1,500 million hectares of irrigated land in the Murray-Darling Basin alone, yet it has been estimated that only about 20% of Australia's total runoff can be sustainably diverted to human uses. And there are also the uncertain consequences of climate change looming just over the horizon, threatening, among other things, to increase the frequency of droughts and extreme weather events, to contribute to the spread of diseases and heat stress in humans and livestock. Climate change threatens to exact a huge cost to Australian society. For example, the cost of damage caused by the 1999 Sydney hailstorm, an extreme weather event, was an estimated $1.6 billion. Not the cheeriest of news now, is it? But now that we know what the problem is, we can now start talking about what to do about it and just what sustainability is. One of the most broadly accepted definitions of sustainability was developed in 1987. When the World Commission on Environment and Development, the Brundtland Commission, agreed on a definition of sustainable development. They defined it as being development that meets the needs of the present generation without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own. But of course, just what are our needs? What will the next generation need? This definition suggests that sustainability is about recognizing the next generation's right to the same freedoms and choices that we now enjoy. Alternatively, it's possible to describe sustainability in terms of our ecological footprint. That it is the point when our ecological footprint is no larger, and ideally smaller, than the amount of bioproductive land available. This definition requires us to look at the questions, just how much can we take? How many of us should there be? How much of the Earth's productivity should we utilize? Just what would be an appropriate standard of living? Because politics, our values, and our understanding of the Earth are always changing and developing, it is unlikely that there will ever be a single, comprehensive definition for sustainability. Despite the multitude of opinions, however, common themes run through most definitions of sustainability. They usually deal with preserving the natural world whilst maintaining the economy and enriching society. Most are not about maintaining life precisely as it is today, instead requiring us to reduce our consumption, to consider the needs of the next generation, to slow down and live a simple life. And they are also about equity between nations, individuals, generations, and other species. The ultimate aim of sustainability is to create a life-sustaining Earth, a future in which prosperity and opportunity increase, while life flourishes and pressures on the oceans, Earth, and atmosphere diminish. So understanding how difficult it can be to define sustainability, it's easy to understand that describing just what a sustainable lifestyle looks like is equally problematic. The two main questions that arise when we discuss sustainability are, firstly, how much is enough? And secondly, how many people can we expect to support in a sustainable manner? Well, the answer is, it depends. Obviously, if everyone existed at subsistence level, the Earth could support a lot more people than if we decided to exist at a more comfortable level. So, the number of people that we can expect to support in a sustainable manner actually depends on many factors, such as the standard of living and our living arrangements. How many people live in a house? Will we live communally with shared common areas, or will we live privately? The number of children we decide to have. For example, if on average we had single-child families, by the year 2100, the world's population would have dropped to only 1 billion. What about our material well-being? Just how much stuff will we require to be happy? Will we share our possessions? The technologies we use is also a factor. Do we all expect to own our own cars, computers, microwaves, and TVs? The political and economic arrangements. Will we have a local economy that focuses on local production for our needs? Or do we instead want our products transported to us from central, intensely farmed locations? Our diet is a factor, as meat production, as many of you probably know, is a lot more resource intensive than vegetable production. Even our fashion, tastes, and moral values can have an effect. Will clothing made from natural fibers be more desirable than those synthetically made? Will people with more possessions be held in higher regard? So fundamentally, we need to start asking ourselves some very important questions. And some very personal questions as well. Such as, could the Earth support everyone living at my standard of life? If we were to decide the Australian standard of living was completely non-negotiable, the Earth could only support about 1.5 billion individuals at our standard of living, based on our ecological footprint and the amount of available land. What then happens to the other 5 billion people? Another question we should ask ourselves is how much of the Earth's productivity should be left wild? The 1.8 hectares of available land per person that we discussed earlier describes the amount of land available if humans used all of the Earth's productive capacity and left none of it wild. How much land do you think should be left wild? 10%, 50%, 90%, 0%? We need to ask ourselves, do good things come from every dollar I spend? Did you know that your income level can be a pretty good indicator of your amount of environmental impact? Obviously, the more you earn, the greater the potential for consumption. On many levels, every service or object that we purchase represents nature consumed. Therefore, more often than not, money not spent represents resources not consumed. We need to consider the companies that we invest our money in and ask if they work to support or to counteract the sustainable changes that we are wanting to create in our lives and our society. Do you believe that other species have inherent value? Do we want sustainability to be primarily about managing ecosystems to preserve the products and services that they provide and that we recognize as valuable? Or do we instead recognize that we are not the only species on this planet that has a right to exist and to have their needs met? Another question we should ask ourselves is, should my race, gender, strength, education, birthplace, or the amount of money I earn allow me to consume more than others? Should you be entitled to consume more than others born into a less fortunate country? Do you believe it is fair that males on average earn more than females? Have you noticed that white people tend to have more opportunities than their darkly skinned neighbours? Do you believe that it is fair that a more prosperous nation can take advantage of the undeveloped resources of the lesser fortunate? We also need to ask ourselves, are wars being fought over the resources that I consume? Consider this, do you use petrol? Do you like to use your car? Did you support the war in Iraq? Resource scarcity is quite often a catalyst for conflict. Do you take from others to support your own lifestyle? Finally, we need to ask ourselves, are our lifestyles in alignment with our own values? Whilst protesting the problem and campaigning for change is important, so is living the solution. It's much easier to claim to be living sustainably than to actually live up to the numbers. So what do we do? Obviously, we're well beyond the point where swapping some light bulbs for their energy efficient equivalents would be anywhere near a sufficient response. The ecological crisis that we now face requires us to make a large fundamental change to the way that we live our lives. But why, given the great necessity for these changes, have they been so slow and difficult to initiate? People are best when responding to an immediate crisis, like a car accident, a bushfire, flooding, but we are less effective in the face of enormous and slow-moving change, such as the loss of biodiversity and climate change. When the crisis is environmental and global, we feel not only frightened and overwhelmed, but also insignificant and helpless. We think, what can I do? I'm only one person. How can I possibly hope to make a difference? The reality is that personal change is hard, and it is made harder still when you feel like you are working against the will of society. Probably the biggest challenge in leading a sustainable lifestyle is being able to say no to the things that are so freely available, but yet contribute to our ultimate downfall. How much easier is it to do all your shopping at a supermarket, rather than doing your homework to determine where to get organically, locally produced produce? How much easier is it to pay the cheapest price without considering to whom you are giving your money? Whilst it is true that the decision to buy the odd organic product probably isn't going to make a huge difference, we need to remember that it is the sum of all of our actions that will. So instead of saying no occasionally to a plastic bag, we need to say never. Make a commitment to buy all of your fruit and veggies from an organic grocer. We really need to decide what kind of world we want to leave to the next generation. What do you want your legacy to be? A healthy and prosperous planet, or a pile of plastic belongings that will outlast even your children's children's children? Unfortunately, the sustainability field has become a lot like the health industry, with a vast number of products and opinions complicating what should essentially be a very simple message. For example, do you remember the three R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle? The more complicated a message becomes, the fewer people will be able to understand it, and the greater the need will be for experts. And of course, the more expensive it then becomes. For example, to eat healthily, you basically need to eat more whole foods, less meat, and say no to fast food. But visit any health food store and consider the huge number of products available that are promoted as being essential for good health. How many of these products do you think actually are essential for good health? Similarly, how many products being promoted as being green actually result in a smaller footprint? The current perception is that sustainability is a complex subject, far beyond the understanding and means of the average individual. This is not very empowering. The aim of Sustainable Voices, of this radio show, is to educate the listeners about the issues affecting us and the sustainable changes that they themselves can realistically expect to be able to create in their own lives, regardless of their income, knowledge, or position in society. Sustainability shouldn't be something you believe you can't afford to create. Also, in recognition of the fact that creating these changes in your life can be difficult, there is a forum where listeners can meet, discuss, and help support each other on the quest for a sustainable life. Eventually, I hope to hold a regular social gathering with the same aim. None of us should feel that we are doing this alone. Ultimately, through listening to this show, through meeting with the many guests we will feature, and through participation in the forums, I hope to encourage listeners to develop a sustainable mindset whereby they are inspired and educated to tread their own path towards sustainability. Some of the topics we'll be covering in future shows include a more detailed look at ecological footprinting and how it can give us detailed feedback on the changes we make in our lives. The use of ecological footprinting allows us to look critically at the changes we make and to understand how they all add up. As we said, it's much easier to think that you're being sustainable, but a lot more challenging to live up to the numbers. Ecological footprinting clarifies where to focus your attention and where to relax. We're going to be talking about money. As said earlier, your income level is a pretty good indicator of your amount of environmental impact, and that we need to start thinking about our purchasing decisions and to ask the question, how do we put our money to work? So we need to consider the companies that we invest our money in and ask if they work to support or counteract the sustainable changes that we want to create. We're also going to look at oil and our high-energy society. The urban sprawl is one of the defining characteristics of modern car-based settlements and is made possible by the car and cheap energy. How much of our modern society and lifestyle do we owe to cheap energy? And what are the consequences of a peak in world energy production? How do we reduce our dependence on oil? We're also going to look at the effects of consumption. To help make sustainability more desirable, we need to think about the harm that heavy consumption is doing to our collective quality of life. The average American, for example, consumes more than ever, yet 65% of US adults are overweight or obese. We work longer and longer hours and have less time for family. Many of us carry substantial personal debt. On a number of fronts, we are arguably worse off than our parents, despite our having more wealth. Finally, a parable on sustainability called How to Catch a Monkey. First, bind and hollow out a coconut. Carve a hole in the top and fill the nut with rice. Find a likely location and wedge it firmly between two large boulders so the top half is clearly visible. Fasten the nut with a chain to a stake in the ground. The hole should be just large enough to allow a monkey to put an extended hand inside, but not big enough to withdraw its fist when full of rice. If it refuses to let go of the rice, the monkey is trapped. If it relaxes its grip and takes less, it will be free and fed. So the question is, can we as a species relax our grip and take only what we need? If you want to leave some feedback or have some input into the development of this show, then send an email to huskydog@zworg.com. That's huskydog@zworg.com. Thanks for listening.